Ny episode av Det alle snakker om med Siri og Kim.
Men behovet mellom fly og nøtter, det fra Dumbo?
Nei, fordi det passer sammen. Det bare en flygreie.
Du får lyst på peanøtter I det du setter deg på flytog, for du tenker sånn, det kanskje en allergiker ombord. Du får lyst på peanøtter I det du våkner om morgenen og vet at du skal til Granka.
Hør Det alle snakker om, gratis, der du hører podcast. They're waking up with the sunrise low, bulletproof
coffee, they're ready to go. Velkommen til Biohacking Girls podcast, der vitenskap møter livsstil, og der vi tar kontroll over vår egen helse.
Vi dykker ned I teknologi, ernæring, trening og mentale hacks for å styrke kropp og sinn. Det handler om å bruke naturens prinsipper for å finne balanse, energi og glede.
Vi tester, utforsker og lever som vi lærer, alt for å inspirere deg til å finne din vei til et balansert og godt liv.
For det alle kan få dette til, og sammen kan vi gjøre kunnskap til praksis og skape varig forandring. Du klar for å ta steg inn I fremtiden? La oss hacke livet sammen.
Today, we're thrilled to welcome Danielle Hamilton, a leading blood sugar and metabolic health expert who combines quantum biology, circadian strategies, and real-world tools to help people reclaim their energy, stabilize cravings, balance their metabolism, and heal naturally. Danielle's approach is a powerful reminder that our bodies are not broken, but they are simply out of sync with nature's rhythms.
Yes, and today we are talking with Danielle Hamilton about how nature's rhythms shape our health, from grounding and circadian light to electrons, deuterium, and seasonal eating. We explore how simply daily choices like barefoot walks, morning sun, and aligning with seasonal foods can impact energy, resilience, and mitochondrial function. This is biohacking rooted in nature. Welcome to this episode.
Biohacking girls, taking the lead, the future is bright, and they're planting the seed.
Danielle. This is such a pleasure. We've been looking forward to this. Welcome to our podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, ladies. I'm honored to be here and really excited for what we're going to be talking about today.
We were so excited when we reached out and you just said, yes, of course I'll come. All of you guys, you're so sweet and nice. And I don't think our audience know about you, so you have to share your personal story and your journey. What led you to specialize in blood sugar, metabolism, and then ultimately circadian and quantum biology? Let's hear it.
So I'll give the condensed version because this could take up a whole episode in and of itself, but I guess I'll start in my childhood. I was a kid who would self-describe as someone who had a sweet tooth and was always drawn towards like processed breakfast foods, to be honest, here in the States. So it's like these frozen waffles with syrup and prepackaged oatmeal with extra sugar and add brown sugar to it. So I was always, and it was the 80s and 90s when I grew up. So it was like low fat era. And I had a lot of colds and flus and ear infections and strep throat and antibiotics. And as I got older, I actually needed to get my tonsils out. Unfortunately, I got strep throat 6 times my senior year of high school. Then because I removed a part of my immune system, the next year I developed seasonal allergies when I went to college and I always struggled with acne. I had horrible periods. I had a lot of bloating. I struggled with my weight my whole life. And then I started to get those seasonal allergies and asthma. And then I moved to Miami, Florida, where it's very tropical. And, you know, so it's different from where I grew up in New York. And so the season for allergies was all year round. And I was allergic to so many things. I was even allergic to palm trees. I was like, this feels like a cruel joke. I didn't know you could be allergic to a palm tree. And I didn't know at the time, but I was also in mold. And so I was just reacting to everything. I had chronic sinus infections. My asthma was really bad. I was taking 3 allergy medications, 2 inhalers. I was, I had to get allergy shots to help desensitize me to some of these things. And because I was so allergic to so many different things, I had to get 5 shots. And I was going broke on the copay at the doctor. And so they actually allowed me to have a nurse where I worked as a speech therapist. I worked in a nursing facility. They allowed me to have the nurse there give me the shots, and she taught me how to do it. So I was doing it to myself. This is very rare to happen in the United States. But I was giving myself 5 allergy shots in the stomach every other day. And I was just like covered in like needles. I'm like, what is going on here? And so I ended up hearing about this diet called the paleo diet. And I read a book called The Paleo Diet Solution by Rob Wolf, and it changed my life. I learned essentially that processed food is not food that our body recognizes as being nourishment, and it drives a lot of inflammation. It lacks a lot of nutrients. It's very foreign to the body. And the idea that we were, as humans, designed to eat a diet full of whole, real foods. And just that premise alone, by switching my diet, all of my allergies and asthma went away. I never got a sinus infection again. My skin cleared. I felt so much better. And I felt like my gut healed, and it was amazing. So I was shouting from the rooftops, paleo, it's amazing. That gluten is killing you, you know. But obviously no one wanted to hear it at the time. And so I was, you know, riding along on the paleo train, doing really well. And then I moved back to New York, and I was eating the same foods, but all of a sudden they were making me gain weight. I started breaking out again. My breakouts were with my cycle, but then it became all the time. I was breaking out in places that I never broke out before, like on my cheeks, all over my forehead. I was like, oh, thank God I have bangs. You know, I was like covering my face up, and I started gaining weight, and I was so tired. I would sleep until like 11 in the morning, which was never like me. I was always up, you know, with the sun, like an early bird. And I was like, what is happening? Because this diet just healed me, and now it's making me sick. So I knew the answer wasn't to go back to eating processed foods, right? That didn't work. But I also realized that I probably had polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. And so when I looked at how to heal your PCOS, everything said, don't have gluten, don't have dairy, don't have refined sugar. I was like, check, check, check. I'm doing that. I'm doing paleo. So I just paleoed harder, whatever that means. And so because nothing changed, nothing changed. And I ended up moving back down to South Florida. I had a little bit of improvement with some of the things that I was doing, but nothing really significant. And I was driving one day, and this is years later, after still struggling. I did get on some medications from the doctor. I got on metformin and spironolactone, and metformin is a diabetes drug, but I didn't know that at the time. So it should have cued me in as to what was coming, but I didn't know. And so finally, years later, I heard a podcast that said PCOS is the diabetes of the ovaries. And I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Because nothing to do with diabetes, blood sugar, insulin, none of that was on my radar, because I didn't have diabetes. No one in my family does. It just, I was like, I don't have that. So I don't need to pay attention to things like blood sugar. So when I started focusing on my blood sugar and stabilizing my blood sugar, lowering my insulin, everything got better. I instantly lost weight. I really never broke out again. My skin is clear. My cycles were regular. And it took about 5 months for my cycles, for me to not have like really bad PMS symptoms. And after that 5th month, I remember like Googling, how long does it take to heal your PCOS once you start doing a ketogenic diet? You know, because I started doing keto, I started doing circadian aligned intermittent fasting. And like so many things changed, but my periods were still really hard. And then that 5th one was like nothing. I had no bloating, no breast tenderness, no, you know, mood issues, no breakouts. It was like oh my gosh, I didn't even know my period was coming. It was just the app on my phone was like, your next cycle is about to begin. I was like, really? So it was amazing to have really healed this in a deep way. So I went to nutrition school. I learned how to help other people heal, support the root causes of what they have going on. And I ended up specializing in blood sugar, metabolic health, insulin sensitivity, and things like that. And my clients were doing so well, you know, so many people having amazing healing, people reversing type 2 diabetes, hypoglycemia, insulin resistance, PCOS, getting their period back when they haven't had it for 4 years, becoming fertile again and having babies, and just so many improvements with so many clients. But there were certain clients that just, they were doing everything. I knew they weren't cheating. I saw their blood sugar graphs. Everything looked perfect. And they just were stuck, you know, whether their glucose was just stuck high and it was stable, but it was just higher than it should be, whether they woke up with this high morning fasting blood sugar that they couldn't get down. And I was like, there has to be more. There's got to be more to learn because, you know, I don't have a doctorate. And so I just was learning about more things. And I came across this idea of quantum and circadian biology, actually from a good friend of mine named Sarah Kleiner. And so I was looking at what she was doing, and she was able to have a baby after having years of infertility. And, you know, she was talking about things like grounding shoes and, you know, seeing sunrise. And I was like, grounding shoes, that sounds like a little bit of a waste of money. You know, like I was not really sold. And being in Florida, it's very sunny there. You know, I was outside all the time and I would get outside in the morning and go out there immediately. So I think I was doing a lot of these things already. So as I'm learning, I'm starting to tell my clients to do some of these practices. So I don't necessarily have a story of my own with this stuff, but when I started telling my clients to incorporate what I was learning about the mitochondria, about the sun, it was like magic. I felt like I had a magic wand, and all of a sudden they were like, Dani, after 13 years of insomnia, I fell asleep within 15 minutes. Like I can't even tell you. And I'll tell you how that happened. but not yet, but I'll tell you, you know, and people who have this stubborn, high fasting blood sugar in the morning, I mean, I'll have to do a little bit of math to get the millimoles. So give me a second. It was 103, and I'm going to get the millimoles for you, which is, let's say, 5.7, 5.8. So someone's stuck with their blood sugar at that number when they woke up, which is in the pre-diabetic range. And within a week of seeing sunrise, this person got their fasting blood sugar down to 4.6. which is optimal, which is about an 84. Yeah. So that, I mean, just seeing that, it's like seeing the sunrise, are you kidding me? And so then I really, when I was seeing these benefits with my clients, I'm like, this is so powerful. And everything that I started to learn about it, I started to incorporate with myself. And there's just such a beautiful simplicity to a lot of this stuff. It's so complex. Like the science is like literally quantum physics. And so I don't even understand all the depth of all the science, but to put these things in practice is so simple. Go outside, step on the earth. Yeah. Energy
Morgen. Hallo, dette Båli og Brattberg på Energy.
Vi på Energy Morgen mandag til fredag, 6-10, og har lyst til at du skal henge med oss.
Finn Energy på radioen din, eller hør på energy.no. Energy.
So thank you for sharing all this. But just to go one step back again, because we are so used to counting calories and we think everything that has to do with our energy, ATP, uh-huh. is like from food. Mm-hmm. Could you just explain to us how these energy transports work and where they come from, which is not only food. It's not only food that gives us energy, obviously.
Yeah. So a lot of my clients saw a huge improvement with energy, and myself too. I would say that my energy is so much better when I get outside. And that's because we as humans, we're actually designed to get only a third of our energy from food. And food, all food, breaks down into electrons. So we have to go back to like middle school science and start talking about things like protons, electrons, photons. And that's what that quantum word means. We're going down to the smallest units. And don't be afraid about the electrons and the protons. I'll give you a brief reminder. So an electron is just a negatively charged particle. So it has a negative charge. And so when food breaks down, it breaks down into electrons. These electrons, stick with me, go down the electron transport chain in our mitochondria, which are the parts of our cells that make energy. So these electrons go through the electron transport chain and create energy for us. That's how food turns into energy, right? But also, we can get electrons from other places. We can get them through stepping on the earth, making contact with the earth. Actually, you don't even have to step. You can touch the earth with any part of your body. We are electric. If you don't remember that your body conducts electricity, you could feel free to stick your finger in a socket if you forget. No, I'm just joking. Don't do that. But all of our body conducts electricity. So we can literally, there's a tree outside. I'm on the second floor right now. There's a tree right outside my window. I could literally stand out there, reach my hand out, pinch that tree, pinch the leaf, and I would be grounded. That's how instantly we can be grounded. And what that means is that we are getting that the earth has a very strong negative charge because of lightning strikes. I think that's wild. So the lightning is striking the earth, charging it with a strong negative charge. And those electrons flow from an area of high concentration, which is in the earth, to low concentration, which is in us. So essentially, we make contact with any part of our skin on a living surface, in a body of water, on a natural stone, in the dirt, in the mud, on the grass, with a leaf. And instantly, those electrons flow into our body. Just like when you take your cell phone and you charge it in and it gets brighter, that's the exact same thing that's happening with our body. So we instantly get electrons that, again, go down the electron transport chain and make energy just by touching the earth. And we also can get those electrons from ultraviolet light. So this light from the sun, it hits our skin and we get electrons, again, going through the electron transport chain. So thinking with a lot of this stuff with the quantum and circadian aspects of health, and I know those words might be confusing, so if you don't know what they mean, that's okay. But this idea is that a lot of it is that we have to think about how our ancestors lived. So our ancestors lived outside. They lived touching the earth. And maybe they had some animal skin hides, you know, for shoes and things like that. But that's a material that is conductive. So we were always making contact with the earth. We were always outside, almost always outside, and not in these very temperature controlled environment with glass that's blocking out the natural, you know, rays from the sun. So that's where a lot of the strategies come from. We just think, oh yeah, my ancestors used to do this all the time. They had this all the time. But one thing that I think is interesting is that as I was learning about all these practices, I look back in my own story and I saw, oh, you know, yes, when I was eating a paleo diet, when I moved from Miami to New York, that food that I was eating in Miami was fine. Like I was feeling fine. I was feeling great. I was healing. But when I ate that same food in New York, it made me sick. And then I did learn, okay, I have to come from a blood sugar lens. But that doesn't explain why that food didn't work for me in a different location, right? So that's something that I never quite understood until I started learning about these practices. So why is it that these foods in Miami, Florida were fine for me, but up north in New York during the winter, they were not? And this has to do with the seasonality, the importance of seasonality of food. And it comes down to something that's a big word, but it's going to be real easy to understand. So I'm going to walk you through it. It's called deuterium. So deuterium is a heavy form of hydrogen. So hydrogen is the first element on the periodic table. Just to remind you, it has one proton, so one positive particle, and one electron. That's it. And so hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe, and it's very abundant in our bodies as well. Now, there's a form of hydrogen that instead of just one proton in the nucleus, it has a neutron as well. So think about it like instead of one basketball, it has two basketballs in the nucleus. Now, as those hydrogens are going down the electron transport chain, there's a certain step in that electron transport chain where we make energy that's called a nanomotor. I think that's really cute. It's like this spinning tiny little motor. And it basically can fit one basketball, one hydrogen. But when deuterium comes in, it has the two basketballs and it clogs that motor. So then we can't make energy, right? So now if we have, you'd imagine if we have a lot of deuterium instead of regular hydrogen, which is called protium, if we have a lot of deuterium in our body, it's going to affect our mitochondria's ability to make energy, right? So deuterium is something that is found often in sugar. It's found in tropical fruits. It's found actually near the equator in higher amounts in the water. So you guys in Norway have really deuterium depleted water, not yeah. like I have way more deuterium in my water here in Austin, Texas. And so, but when you, let's say we're going to go back to the example of Miami, very tropical place. Mango season is coming up soon in June. I don't live there anymore, unfortunately. I love mango season, but you guys wouldn't be eating mangoes, right? And why is that? Why don't mangoes grow in Norway? Because there's not enough strong enough sunlight. And so the strong sunlight actually helps us deplete deuterium. So when we sweat and from UV light, we can deplete this deuterium. So when we eat these foods in season, so when I was having like acai bowls and smoothies and sweet potatoes down in Miami, Florida, it's also really hot. There's a lot of sun. I was sweating. I was then eating those same foods, blending a banana in my iced coffee. I know it sounds gross, but it's really good with coconut sugar. You know, in the middle of December in New York, where it's cold and gray and there's not a lot of sun at all, it's a really big mismatch because there's so much deuterium load in what I'm eating that it's actually negatively impacting my metabolic health. So it was really interesting to learn that sort of looking back that a seasonal diet is also going to be one of your best friends. Mm-hmm. And with you guys living in Norway, there because you're so far from the equator, there's such a distinction in your seasons. And so honoring the seasonality of what is around is going to be really powerful for helping anyone to heal. And so that's one of the concepts that I learned in supporting our metabolic health and supporting our blood sugar. We're better able to tolerate eating simple sugars in the summer when UV light shines on our skin, on our stomach. It actually changes the gut bacteria to be better able to digest simple sugars, which is so cool because that's when more fruits are growing, right? And that's so we're set up to be able to metabolize different foods better at certain times. And so that means more in the winter months when the ground is frozen, that we lean maybe more into meats and fats and stews and stocks and maybe some root vegetables like onions and things like that. And so we may tend towards more of a ketogenic carnivore style way of eating. You don't have to do it exactly, but it just sort of tends to happen. You know, you're not dying for a soup in the middle of July. Like it's just like, nah, I don't want that, right? But it's like soup season and the warm stew. So eating seasonally is a really powerful tool.
But does that also mean that eating your food outside is a good thing in the sunshine?
Yes.
And how does that work?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the reason why eating your food outside is so beneficial, it's not just like fun and feels like, it's spring, it's so nice, that the sun has all different types of light frequencies that come from it. And some of these are invisible, some of them are visible. And all of them have benefits for our body. So one of the most predominant type of frequency that comes from the sun is called infrared. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of infrared, especially biohacking people, because there's panels like those that have infrared in them. And so that light's got to be pretty important if we're harnessing it and putting it in panels and, you know, using it all the time. Well, it just so happens that the sun's light is about 49% infrared. So it's about half of it is infrared. And so if the sun that gives all life to life on Earth is half infrared, we got to think, okay, there's got to be something important about this. And there certainly is. So infrared light, when it hits our skin, it actually helps to lower our glucose levels because it helps our mitochondria utilize glucose more efficiently. So that means it lowers our blood sugar levels. So when we eat a meal outside, we actually have a much better blood sugar response to our meals than if we eat it inside. I've had my audience on Instagram do some experiments. And so they've been outside, spent about an hour outside eating their meal and had that exact same meal the next day inside under artificial lights. And there was like a huge difference in the blood sugar response. Like it was really cool to see. And then also when you're eating outside, much of the time you could be grounded as well. And so you're getting that extra hit of anti-inflammation. You're getting that mitochondrial support to utilize this, utilize the glucose. And infrared light is just important for so many other things, not only the blood sugar aspect, but it is also really healing for our body. It helps structure the water in our body, and it's very anti-inflammatory. So I could go on with lists of all different benefits of infrared light. But perhaps as a biohacking podcast, many of your people know that one already. It's great for the skin. It helps prepare the skin to get stronger light later in the day. And infrared light, it bounces off of leaves and trees. So you can get infrared light even in the shade. So there's still benefits to being outside, even if you're not in direct sun, because we are just getting the infrared light is bouncing off of everything. And I think that one of the biggest problems in our modern world is that our indoor environments, where we're spending over 90% of our time, these indoor environments are very devoid of infrared. And they're made like that on purpose. And we're like, why would you do that? Infrared is so good. Like, why are we blocking it out? Well, infrared, some of the frequencies of infrared, mainly the mid to far, are perceived as heat. So our homes and our light bulbs are made to be energy efficient, which means it's blocking out heat. So a lot of people are like, oh, I have so much natural light in my house. I'm like, well, if the windows are closed, the light is no longer natural, unfortunately, because it's blocking out a huge amount of this infrared light. And then it's skewing higher in blue light, which we can talk about, which raises blood sugar and cortisol and insulin, whereas infrared light supports lowering of it. So if we're spending so much of our time inside, it's actually negatively impacting our metabolic health. So going outside, especially in the morning, could be when there's a high amount of infrared light. In the evening, when the sun is setting, there's also a really high amount of infrared light. But infrared is all day, all year round, all locations on Earth. So even when it's freezing cold in Norway in the winter, there is actually still infrared light outside, which is crazy to think. There's not a lot of other light. Well, if the sun is up. So depending on where you live, the sun might not be up. So, but if the sun is up, there's going to be infrared. But then think about all the practices that we do in winter and that I'm sure you guys do. You're going to bring in infrared sauna. Maybe there's fire. There's warming baths. All of these things have infrared. And then the panels, right? So we naturally as humans are always bringing infrared into our environment because it feels, oh, it just feels so good. And it's so deeply healing for our bodies.
Biohacking girls, taking the lead, the future is bright and they're planting the seed.
Vi får ofte spørsmålet, hvorfor tar dere egentlig kollagentilskudd?
Svaret enkelt, fordi kollagennivåene våre begynner å synke allerede I slutten av 20-årene. Det skjer naturlig, og det går enda raskere med stress, dårlig kosthold eller lite søvn.
Resultatet? Jo, slappere hud, fine linjer og mindre spenst. Men heldigvis finnes det en enkel løsning.
The Solution fra Oslo Skin Lab hydrolysert kollagentilskudd som jobber med huden innenfra, og som dokumentert reduserer rynker og gir bedre elasticitet. Dette biohacking.
Nå det sommer, bar hud og naturlig glow det som gjelder. Gi huden din det lille ekstra, føl deg vel I egen kropp hele sommeren.
Vi har brukt dette kollagenet I 2 år, med digger det, og ja, med merkeforskjell. Vil du også teste The Solution fra Oslo Skin Lab? Du kan oppleve gløden selv. Bruk rabattkoden BIO60 for 60% rabatt på første kjøp.
But a question about the food again, because we have been talking about deuterium, if high levels of deuterium can reduce the ATP, the energy production through the mitochondria, yes. Does the same happen in the plants? So if plants are outside in sunlight, in kind of windy and with less water, will they have lower deuterium level or higher? And does that change also from, yeah, place to place?
I'm honestly not really sure, but my understanding is that the stronger the sunlight, so the higher the UV, the more fruits and sweetness can grow. And so the high sugar, high starch content is going to be higher in deuterium. So I don't think it has to do as much with the water as much. The water that we drink for us, yes, but it more has to do with the sunlight for the crops and the foods, the seasonality of the foods. So the higher sugar a plant has, the higher deuterium content it will also have. So a blueberry that's grown in Norway is going to have far less deuterium than a mango grown in Miami. So is that helpful?
Yes.
Okay.
But also a question about seasonal food. Mm-hmm. What is seasonal food? How far away? Because I'm actually in Spain now and we have Costa del Sol, which is a light coast. And then you have Costa Tropical, which is just 2 hours away. Uh-huh. And when I buy avocados and mangoes, they're from Costa Tropical, but they're seasonal from me. Do you think that's seasonal enough?
Yeah. So I would say looking around there's no exactness for this. And I think that to stress out about it is going to make it worse. So if you can't eat a food without stressing about it, then that's not it. So what we want to do is just kind of look on the labels of seeing where things are grown and looking like, okay, is it in a radius? Like, could it potentially be grown in the climate that I'm in? Is it similar latitude? Longitude is not really relevant here. We want to look more at latitude, but give yourself a little bit of a space here. So, you know, I would say for anyone who feels like I personally feel overwhelmed by that recommendation. So I sometimes hesitate to share this because people tend to freak out. They're like, well, what am I going to eat? Oh my God. Because if you walk into a grocery store in the United States, it is very hard to find even one food that is grown in your area if you don't live, let's say, in California. All of the produce is imported from Mexico, from Peru, from California. So it's really hard to do in the United States. So what I tend to do, and I'm not sure, I can't speak to other countries.
It's the same here, the same. I had an experiment this winter to try to find anything grown in Norway. It was impossible.
Yeah, and because things aren't growing, you know, and so it could be a big challenge. So what I recommend for people to do is go on Google, go on, you know, ChatGPT, ask like, what are some seasonal foods in my area right now? And then knowing the list of those foods, I would say go to the grocery store. And even if it was grown in California and I live in Texas, it's okay because it could grow here. So the idea is that the light had to be strong enough to grow this food. And I'm having light that is that strong. You can also get food that's grown north of you. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, if you live in Australia or Southern Hemisphere, you can get food that's grown south of you because the sun isn't that strong there. So you can kind of you could metabolize those foods as well. So is that making sense? I don't want to stress people Absolutely. Out over it, yeah. but like just as we all, you know, in the biohacking space, we all started looking like, is this organic? Is it non-GMO? Is it whatever? Yeah. Now we want to add more. Is it, could it be grown here? Is it a seasonal food for my area? And you want to just do the best that you can. You're not going to, we all know, you're not going to drop dead if you eat a mango in Norway. You're not going to. It's, you know, and maybe you go in the sauna. Like it's going to be okay. So I just want to make sure that we're not like contributing to like a lot of heightened stress, but also just being, making a better choice for ourselves when we are able.
So one more question about the food mm-hmm. here, because better growth gives more nutrition to the to foods too, like magnesium or trace minerals. Yes, all these, and that means there are more nutrition or antioxidants, flavonoids, something like that in the food you're eating. So what would you recommend when we go to the grocery store to look for, obviously ecological or wild caught produce? What would you recommend?
You know, do the best you can and try to go to farmers markets or get the food that's grown, you know, most close to you. Organic foods, definitely going to be recommended. But, you know, our food supply is, our soils are so depleted. So it is just a challenge. You know, if you can grow anything in your backyard, I do recommend it. I don't grow anything here. So don't think I'm like, oh, just grow your own food, you know? But yeah, I don't think anything specific in that regard, you know, just do the best you can with getting the highest quality you can afford. And you'll start to notice that, okay, yeah, let's say peaches are available in my area in the grocery store. Maybe they're grown somewhere else, but you bite into it. You're like, this is like dry. I don't know if you guys have ever been to the US and eaten out of season produce, but it's terrible. Like it's really like the tomatoes are light pink and the strawberries are white on the inside. Like the food has lost its flavor and its nutrient density. So when you get the food that's more in season, it's like, oh, this is actually delicious. And it's like, you know, it's juicy and it's brightly colored. And so eating the food in season, you'll notice a huge difference as well with the quality. So knowing that like I'm only going to eat peaches during peach season is going to be important. But you go into a grocery store and they're like, taste the tropics. And they say that, you know, a pineapple is seasonal. And I'm like, it's seasonal in Costa Rica where it's growing, not here. So you have to be careful with that marketing and do your own research so you know what's happening in your area.
Yeah. We are so far removed from where our food are coming from. So it's really good suggestions. And especially what you say about just taste, and you can see that it's not the tomatoes in Norway in the wintertime. Not so good.
Yeah, same here.
You often say your body is not broken. Mm-hmm. It's just out of sync. Can you mm-hmm. explain what you mean by this?
Yeah. So a lot of times I would say in our modern times, a lot of people are struggling with just so many different health issues. We feel tired. We feel like our hormones are off. We're struggling to lose weight. There's just so many different issues, sleep and immune system. And what I found is that I started learning about that word that I mentioned earlier, the circadian rhythm. And when I first heard this word, I don't know if you can relate to this or anyone listening can relate, but I was just like, okay, I kind of know what that means. Something about being asleep, something about being awake, but like, I didn't really know what it meant. So if you don't really know what it means, you are in good company and I will help you understand what it means so that it actually makes sense. And it's going to help you have this like aha moment of why it's so important. So our circadian rhythm, we hear like, oh, it's like a 24-hour cycle. Yes, it's a 24-hour cycle because we live on a planet that has just about a 24-hour day. If we lived on Neptune, for example, we'd have a 17-hour circadian rhythm because their day is 17 hours. If we lived on Venus, it would be like 2,000-something hours, which is insane. Their day is longer than their year. So we'd have a 2,000-hour, you know, circadian rhythm. So it just so happens to be 24 hours because we live on the lovely planet Earth. Also, side note, we have seasons on our planet only because the planet is tilted. Like if it were straight up, we wouldn't have seasons. Isn't that such a weird concept? But blows my mind. So we live on this planet with about a 24-hour day. And the darkness and lightness cycle, again, is going to change because we're on a tilt. So that tilt is going to determine the amount of daylight and darkness that we have. But this daylight and darkness is a huge signal to our body. So we actually evolved to have light receptors in our eyes and on our skin that captures the light. And that light sends a signal to this part of our brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, or SCN. Think about it like the control tower in your brain. So the control tower receives the information and says, ah, okay, it's 2 p.m. and it's this date, it's, you know, February 5th, and it's, you know, we are in Norway, right? So the light information that we're getting in our eyes and on our skin is constantly communicating to our body what time it is. So why is it so important that we know what time it is? Well, if you've ever taken a nap and you've sort of slept a little bit too long and you wake up and you're like, oh my gosh, like you have a panic moment of like, what time is it? Like, where am I? Who am I? Right? Like, have you ever had that moment where you just have this mini panic about like, what time did I oversleep? Like, is it tomorrow? Like, you don't know when it is. And what's the first thing you try to do? Figure out what time it is, right? Like you instantly are like, what time is it? That is the very first thing that comes to your mind. Why does our conscious mind, why do we need to know what time it is? We need to know what time it is so we know what to do. Why am I not decorating for Christmas right now? Well, it's May. It's not time for that. Why am I not brushing my teeth and putting on my pajamas? Because it's daytime. It's not time for that. You know, so why am I not at the dentist? Because it's not time for that, right? We have to know what time it is so we know what to do. Well, our body is no different because we evolved on a planet with this darkness, lightness cycle over this 24-hour period. Our body developed the ability to be better at doing certain tasks at certain times. So we have hundreds and thousands and millions of tasks to do in all of our cells all day long, all night long. So we have so many things to do. We have to organize it, right? So I'm not going to organize a podcast at like 10 p.m. because my brain's not going to be good at thinking at that time. I'm not going to schedule a dinner at 11 p.m. because my butt, maybe if I lived in Argentina, I studied abroad there, that was totally foreign to me. But my body doesn't digest and metabolize food that well at that time. So I wouldn't schedule my sleep to be at 10 a.m. because it's bright. Like it wouldn't work, right? So we're better at doing certain things at certain times of the day or night. And so we're better at digesting and metabolizing our food earliest in the day. We are better at solving problems and having energy and hunting earlier in the day. We're better at rest, repair, detox, recovery in the evening when we have all that melatonin. So when our body is synced with the sun's cycle, things can run right. And when we're getting that constant reminder, it's like the conductor of the orchestra is working beautifully. It's telling, oh, you come in now, you turn off now. So it's turning on genes, it's turning off genes, it's release this hormone, stop releasing this hormone. So everything is working as it should when the light environment coming in and our daily routine is matching what the sun is doing outside of our window. Now, the problem comes when we are out of sync, right? So think about a restaurant that serves breakfast, let's say. Let's say the workers need to be in at 5 a.m. They need to start preparing things. Then the customers start coming in at 6 and all the orders are going out and they're cleaning up tables. And then, you know, it comes the afternoon and the evening and things are starting to wind down. So they start cleaning up and they start taking out the trash and putting in orders for the next day. And, you know, they turn on the close sign and the workers leave, they get a good night's sleep and they come in, do it all over again. Well, what happens if that whole day goes by and all of a sudden they're about to close the doors when a giant party of 30 people come in the doors and they sit down and they start demand to be served? All of a sudden, all the workers, they're super tired. So they're like making mistakes. They didn't have enough. They didn't have the orders in. So there's things not available on the menu. People are getting backed up. Some of the servers have gone home. We're on a skeleton crew here. Mistakes are being made. And then we don't place the orders for the next day. The trash doesn't get taken out. And the workers are extremely tired and they come in the next day. They come in late. It throws off the whole system. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
That this is what we're doing when we're living out of sync with the sun. So if we're staying up late, we're watching TV with bright blue light in our eyes that's telling our body that it's noon, that we're, you know, more likely we're, you know, scrolling on our phone and we're getting the signal that it's 2 p.m. So our bodies are being told that it's a different time than it is. And we're staying up late, we're eating late. And so our body is confused as to what time it is. So when it's confused, it doesn't know what to do. And that's where dysfunction comes in. Because, okay, I was supposed to be detoxing all of this stuff and overnight as I was sleeping, but I went to sleep too late and I had all these lights on and I didn't get the right melatonin release. So when all these processes get backed up, we may not be able to make up for all of those things that we missed. So if day after day, for example, we're going to bed really late and maybe then all these repair processes don't happen or some of the detox processes that happen overnight are getting shoved to the back. And so we wake up and we feel inflamed, we feel tired, we need extra coffee. And it's not a lack of coffee. It's that we aren't in sync with what the sun is doing. And a lot of people have these really busy schedules and they're like, well, I have to be on my son's school schedule. And so that's where we can use some different modern strategies to help us stay synced with the sun. So one of the biggest factors that's impeding our ability to maintain this syncing with our routine and our cycles with the sun is light. Our modern light environment is really detrimental and it's really confusing to our body. So all light, I said earlier that we have receptors all over our body for light. Well, that not only includes the sun. It used to just be the sun that we were, you know, cued into, but now we turn on a light bulb or our cell phone or the computer or just being behind closed windows. All of that light is like sending a confusing signal to your body that's used to getting its information from the sun. So I like to think about this because I call the sun the conductor. So if the sun is the conductor, I like to think about these other foreign light sources as like little kids in the audience of the orchestra that go up and start conducting the orchestra. And like, they're saying like, no, you come in now. I want to hear you play. And then it sounds like a big mess, right? So I love to use these analogies because it helps you be like, oh, okay, this light is just giving my body mixed signals so it doesn't know what to do. And so if I want everything in my body to run better, I need to be really mindful of my light environment. So one of the most important things we have to do to actually get that sync with the sun so we know that like we're on time with the sun is catching sunrise. And this is going to be a challenge for a lot of you guys because you're living at a latitude where it's not always possible. Maybe the sun isn't coming up. And maybe in the summer, the sun is coming up at like an ungodly hour. So I don't expect you to go outside at like 3 a.m. and catch the sunrise. But what we want to do is get sort of as close as we can within the realm of what's livable and doable. So let's say the sun is rising at 6:00. So we want to get outside maybe a little before six, and the light before the sun crosses the horizon is loaded with infrared light. And so then as soon as the sun crosses the horizon, we get the introduction of blue light into our environment. And some of you might be thinking, well, isn't blue light bad? Well, one would think, based on all the, you know, the marketing of the blue blocking glasses, blue light is not bad. It's just not good for our biology at a certain time of the day, but it's actually essential. That's what sort of hits that play button with the sun, is getting outside and seeing that blue light in the morning. That tells the body, boom, the sun has risen. It is daytime. Let's start all the daytime activities. So I like to think, you guys have a podcast, so you can see as we're recording, there's a little waveform of the audio and then there's the video. And so you could see me talking. Well, my podcast editor, if I'm recording certain things, has me clap. And then there's like a really long waveform. So then when I clap, that's how the person lines up the audio and the video. So they know, okay, this is where to press it so that my mouth is lining up with what I'm saying, right? So I think about this with the sun as well. So it's like that the body knows exactly when, okay, boom, now we're going to start all the processes. So it knows exactly what to do at the right time. And so seeing sunrise doesn't sound like the most, like, what's going to happen? Nothing's happening. Like, you're sitting there and you're like, is something supposed to happen? But it is the most powerful strategy that you can have, is waking up and getting outside nice and early so you can see the sun crossing over the horizon.
Yes. And how would that exactly look like, Danielle? Like, if you wake up in the morning without an alarm, do you go straight in your pajamas out in the garden or at a terrace? Just tell me exactly, how does this look like? How many minutes and how many days or weeks does it take to reset these for the listeners who would like to do this little biohack?
Sure. So I'm going to say that there is no exactness. That's not what this is about. This is not like 30 seconds, 5 minutes. There is nothing. What the body wants instead is more consistency, right? So I don't want to tell someone, well, you have to spend an hour. They're going to be like, well, I can't do this. And then they're not going to do it. So there is no exact amount of time. What you're going to focus on is doing as much as you can consistently. So if it means 30 seconds, it means 30 seconds. If you get 5 minutes out there, that's great. The more you can be outside, the better. So we do want to aim for as long as we can, but also there's just going to be seasons where it's a little bit difficult, you know, young moms and getting these little kids to school and stuff. There's just going to be times where you can't, but when you can, you want to get outside first thing in the morning. You don't want other light before the sunrise, but if the sun is coming up in Norway at like 10 a.m., which probably happens, right? Yes. What you want to do is wear orange lens blue blocking glasses, because you want to block all of the blue light that's going to be potentially in our environment from coming in our eyes, so we don't send a signal too early of when the sun has risen. Because if the body is getting blue light, it thinks that the sun has risen. And yes, there are receptors on our skin as well. So you do ideally want to cover up and maybe not wear a tank top. So in the winter, it kind of makes sense. You wouldn't be wearing tank tops anyway. So you bundle up, put your blue blockers on, and then you want to make sure that your light environment before the sun comes up is also conducive to not having a ton of blue in there. So we'll talk about that in a minute when we get to the evening stuff. But going outside, we want that light from the sun to be the first light in our eyes. You stand outside, you face east. You do not have to see the sun. There could be clouds. There could be a mountain in the way. There could be houses, trees. That is okay. Just look at the sky. No matter what the weather is, as long as it's safe for you to be outside, you stand out there for a little while and face east. If you can, let's say it's pouring torrential rain and thunderstorm, you probably don't want to stand outside in that. So what you could do ideally is open a window and look at the sky facing east. So in that room I have right over there, that faces east. So sometimes I'll do that when there's bad weather, and I just stand there, and there is a bug screen over the window, and that's okay. You just don't want to have glass. Same thing as you don't want to have glasses on either. So if you wear glasses, just kind of pull them down and look over them at the sky. And we also don't really want to have contacts in either. So, you know, if you're blind, like, make sure you can see, you're not going to get hurt, but ideally we don't want to have contacts in. And if you do have contacts, you definitely want the ones that do let in UV light. You don't want any UV blocking in your glasses or contacts if possible. So you want to stand out there for as long as you can. And the more healing you need, like if you're really dysregulated, the more time you will want to spend outside.
Biohacking girls, taking the lead, the future is bright, and the plant in the sea.
Du har ligget nå på bestsellerlisten I 12 uker. Wow!
Og det takket være deg som backer biohacking og faktisk skjønner greia før alle andre.
Det snakkes om biohacking overalt nå, I møterom, på treningsstudio og I markedsavdelingene.
Og endelig også I helsen din, der det faktisk betyr noe.
Og vi digger at du med å løfte begrepet I Norge.
Dette ikke bare en trend, det en livsstil.
Ja, du hører oss Biohacking Girls med Norges første bok om biohacking. La oss hacke livet videre sammen. Og takk for at du med oss.
And the plant in the seed.
I just have a question because, yep, we live in Norway and in the winter time the sun gets up at 10. And when you get up early in the winter time, is that a good time to use a red light panel as lighting inside, or is it too early?
That's a great question. I'm so glad you asked that. It's too early. I only recommend using light devices when the sun is up, because that panel is bright as well. So it's going to be way too bright. So not only the blue can sort of start your circadian rhythm, but brightness can also do it. So if you're using these light panels when it's, you know, 8 p.m. in the winter, that's not the right time to use them. But I would say for people who never really get the sun coming up, so let's say you live even more north and the sun doesn't rise at all, you want to maybe make your own day. So maybe you do start with the red light panel, maybe you put a little blue in there, maybe you use a little bit of like a vitamin D lamp, but that it might not be that appropriate to do unless you're like really, really, really struggling with the immune system. If your vitamin D is like bottom of the barrel, if you are, you know, seasonal affective disorder, but honestly, it may not be the best time to do all those things, because when, if you have darker skin, it's going to be a yes, you do want the vitamin D light. But you guys are from Norway and you're probably what's called a Fitzpatrick 1 or 2. So there's this thing called the Fitzpatrick scale, and that measures how basically how dark your skin is and how well it tans. So I'm a Fitzpatrick 3 because I'm half Swedish, half Italian. And so I do have that Mediterranean in me. So I tan really, really dark, but my skin is very, very pale. Most of the time if I'm not in the sun, and I have to be really careful to allow myself to build that tan in order to get tan, because I could get burned really easily. So when you're a Fitzpatrick 1 or 2, as most people living in Scandinavia are, you are actually beautifully adapted for the climate that you live in, for your latitude. People who are a Fitzpatrick 6, for example, who have very, very dark skin, and maybe they live in Nigeria, very close to the equator, they are going to be a perfect match for their environment. And the reason why their skin is so dark is because there's so much melanin in the skin, and that protects it from the sun. So a long time ago, there was no such thing as sunscreen. So when people lived in Africa, that's where all life began, actually, we all had all of this pigment in our skin to protect us, because we were outside, we lived outside, there was no sunscreen, so we needed natural protection. Now, as we as humans migrated away from the equator and spread out and went closer to the poles, we lost our melanin. Why? If we had that melanin, it would be like wearing too much sunscreen, so we wouldn't make enough vitamin D, because we don't get vitamin D half the year because there's no UVB light during a big chunk of the year. So we adapted with lighter skin to be able to then receive more UVB because there's less protection, less melanin blocking it. So we can get all the vitamin D we need in the summer, and then there's no vitamin D in the winter. And that's where, interestingly enough, a lot of the functions of vitamin D, there's a big overlap with melatonin, which is the hormone of darkness. So in the winter, the darkness is our friend, even though it's depressing and it's cold. But the darkness is our friend in the winter because the dark signal leads to the release of a lot of melatonin. Actually, 95% of our melatonin is made in the mitochondria in response from infrared light. So if you struggle with sleeping, that's why getting up and seeing sunrise, it's huge for sleep, because we make 95% of our melatonin during the day from infrared light. So then the darkness is when it's released. So if we're not in a dark environment, we don't get that release of that pineal melatonin that helps us sleep and repair. So over the winter, we get that overlap of anti-inflammatory, immune regulating, supporting healing and repair. That's taking over a lot of the processes of vitamin D. So your vitamin D may naturally dip in the winter, but if you did the job in the summer of building that solar callus, getting as much vitamin D as possible, you could be okay through the winter. But that would be granted you're at a match for your latitude. So if someone is, let's say, from India who emigrated to Norway, they're at a big mismatch and a very dangerous disadvantage. So, because their skin is darker, and then they're going to have a harder time reaching sufficiency of vitamin D. So then their ancestors would have had vitamin D available all year round. So if you are at that mismatch where your skin is darker and you're at a higher latitude, that's quite dangerous because you're at risk of vitamin D deficiency and then a lot of autoimmune stuff, immune issues, metabolic issues. But then the reverse is true for people with lighter skin living closer to the equator. You're at a higher risk of getting burned, but it's actually an easier thing to accommodate for.
I just have a question about my own skin, because I am obviously Norwegian, but I spent a lot of my summers in Spain when I was a little. I have been sunburned once in my life. I never wear sunscreen. I can be outside. I'm always conscious when I'm out, of course. I did get some sunspots because I was on the pill when I was younger. So I'm a bit careful with my, it's a hormonal thing. But why do you think I never get sunburned? And do you think my skin, even though I'm Norwegian, I have like trained my skin to tolerate and to absorb more? I'm really dark when I tan.
Yeah, so like you might be a Fitzpatrick 3 as well. So it's not necessarily, your Fitzpatrick scale may not be only dependent on where you live. It is based on other factors and how well you tan. So what you probably did really well, Monica, was allowed your body to slowly get UVB light instead of just going out and scorching yourself in the middle of the day and coming inside. So there's a very specific way that our bodies can safely get vitamin D from the sun. I'm actually making a course about this right now. And so what we want to do is use the sun at all different times of the day, because again, our ancestors were outside all the time. So they were out there when the sun was rising. They were out there in the middle of the morning. They were out there in the middle of the day. So we want to mimic what they did, because I don't know about you, but I don't hear about people dropping dead of skin cancer from our ancestors. They just didn't do it, yet they didn't have sunscreen. So when you look at what the sun does, you see that, oh, it's not trying to burn you. It's not trying to kill you. It's actually, it's giving you all it needs. It's giving you all we need to be able to get this beautiful, healthy tan and reach vitamin D sufficiency. So the first step is getting outside at sunrise and getting all this infrared light on your skin. If you weren't able to spend enough time at sunrise, you could definitely also dose yourself with a little bit of infrared light from a panel, and that can really help to prepare the skin for what's to come. Then we want to spend time in the UVA window of light. UVA light is amazing, and it does helps the body produce a lot of things. It makes the body produce serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, endorphins, this thing called palm C, which then cleaves into a bunch of different products like alpha MSH, beta MSH, as well as, and those are melanocyte stimulating hormones. And so we produce melanin from this UVA light. And the melanin is like producing our own sunscreen. So then when we finally get to the UVB light, we want to spend increasing amounts of time in that UVB light. And that's going to allow the body to gradually get tan and build its own protection. So I don't know if you've ever had this experience where, maybe Monica, you haven't had this experience, but when you wore a bathing suit, and let's say you had a tan line from a bathing suit, and then you wore a new bathing suit and a whiter piece of skin was kind of like sticking out maybe by your armpit or something, or like over your leg. And you go to the beach or you go to the pool and you come home and you're only sunburned in that tiny spot where it was all white, right? But the rest of your skin isn't sunburned. So what's happening there? Well, the melanin is doing its job, right? The melanin protects your skin from getting sunburned, so you can stay out there way longer. So if you go out there with this white skin, and you like, you're going to get burned. So that's the idea of building this solar callus. It's like we are prepping our skin and we're layering on, allowing the skin to build melanin and then getting out of the sun when we're getting too hot or pink, or you could get a little bit of pinkness. That's just some of the natural response from the sun, but you get out of the sun and go into the shade in that infrared light when you're done. And then what happens at the end of the day? Sunset. And what is that like? A giant infrared panel. You just stand there. And what does infrared light do? Heals sun damage, builds collagen, reduces sunspots. So the sun was built. The sun, it wasn't, I mean, it just is like a full, you know, it's this beautiful system that is not trying to kill us. And it's when you learn how it's so set up to help you prepare your skin, you dose the skin, you heal your skin, and then you get a nice sleep, right? You sleep really well after you're out in the sun, because you got all that melatonin, you got all that brightness, and then you sleep really well and you're repairing and healing your skin, and then you can do it again. So that's how you develop vitamin D sufficiency, and you avoid having negative impacts from the sun because you're consuming it in its whole form, it's in its full spectrum. You absolutely can like cover your face if you know, to avoid some photo aging. I allow my face to get about 15, 20 minutes and then I'll cover it with a hat. You want to make sure you're not wearing sunglasses because the sunglasses are going to block that signal to your body that it's very bright, that there's a lot of UV. And what that's going to do is it's going to cut the connection between your body's natural skin protection, because it doesn't think it's getting all this light. And so you have basically, long story short, is if you wear sunglasses, you have a higher risk of sunburn, which is what we want to avoid. We want to avoid burning. There's a really great app called My Circadian app, and it shows you when all these times of the day are. So you can see when the sun rises, you can see when UVA is, you can see if and when there is UVB. So UVB, the one that makes UVB light, is the one that makes vitamin D. A lot of people don't know that. They think, and a lot of huge accounts, like I had a little conversation with someone this morning who has a very big account, very smart person, but saying, you need UV protection if the UV index goes over a 2. And then I made a comment like, well, how would you get vitamin D if that's the case? And people think, well, you get early morning and late afternoon sunlight. None of that light has UVB. You cannot make the sun does not equal vitamin D. That's what people don't realize. And so it's this UVB light that they tell us to fear. That's the only one that makes vitamin D. So, and that one is in more of the late morning to early afternoon, that those peak hours of the day that everyone's telling you to avoid. And so if we avoid those or use sunscreen, sunscreen blocks about 90, a sunscreen SPF of 15 blocks about 95% of our vitamin D. And people are using higher numbers too. They're like, I'm outside all the time. I don't know why my vitamin D isn't higher. I go, do you use sunscreen? They're like, yeah, all the time. Well, that's why. Like, we're not told this. We're told to put this on. So it blows a lot of people's mind. They're like, are you kidding me? That's why I was going outside for sunrise. I thought that was enough. I thought that was to get vitamin D. And it's not. It's for a lot of other things, but not vitamin D. So vitamin D is so important for our metabolic health. You know, I can't be a blood sugar person and not mention how important it is for our metabolic health, for our insulin sensitivity, for our glucose tolerance. It's so essential. And I think that we have this like false sense of security that if I just take a vitamin D capsule, I'm going to be fine if I get my levels up. But that's just one marker of storage D. Vitamin D is a hormone, and there are tons of metabolites. I wish I could show you guys this picture of it's like what happens when the sun hits. There's like little words everywhere of just showing all the different things that get created when UVB light hits our skin. And I think that the vitamin D marker is a proxy for sun exposure. Like, have we had enough sun exposure? I think we're trying to outsmart the system and just give vitamin D. And I'm not saying vitamin D can't be like life-saving in certain instances. If someone's so depleted, like it can, you know, we saw this with COVID where a lot of people could, you know, who had vitamin D sufficiency were more protected from dying against COVID. But like, so it's not like the supplements are worthless, but the supplements can deplete and disrupt a lot of nutrient balances. Oftentimes you need magnesium to hold vitamin D in circulation. And when you take vitamin D, it depletes your magnesium. And so then a lot of people are just magnesium deficient. A lot of people are on statins. They have this low cholesterol and then they don't synthesize D because you need cholesterol to synthesize vitamin D. When we take a lot of vitamin D, we're throwing off our fat soluble vitamins. So there's so many different reasons why vitamin D capsules are just, I think of it like a false sense of security. Use it if you absolutely need it, but do all this stuff with the sun and see how that goes first. So, yeah.
This makes so much sense, Dani, because it's like the macronutrients from the food. You need all of them and you need the micronutrients. When you tell us about these four stages of sunlight from morning to mid to UVB to the night, if we do this routine, the question here is, will you soak up better vitamin D and will you avoid sunburn better?
Yes, absolutely. So you become better able to get vitamin D because you are protected from the harsh UVB. So if you were to skip these steps and you go in the sun and you have a paler skin, let's say a Fitzpatrick 1-3, chances are you'll burn. So then you can't be in the sun. So then you can't get the UVB, right? So all of this is to actually build the tan that will allow you to stay outside and not burn. So I grew up in New York and I never used sunscreen as a kid. And I lived on Long Island. So we were 10 minutes away from a beach. So the very second that we could go to the beach, we were at the beach. And I mean, the UV index was probably like a 4. Or 5 maybe. And so what you want to do in spring, actually, when we're recording this in the Northern Hemisphere, this is the perfect time to really start getting outside and starting to build that solar callus, because it's something that should happen gradually over the season. And so by mid-August in New York, when I was a kid, I could be out there all day and not get a lick of a sunburn at all. Like, it wasn't even on our radar. My mom was always like, stick your face in the sun. She was the opposite of a lot of moms. And I credit that with like me not having autoimmune issues, because I always say I was one bite of gluten away from an autoimmune disorder because my health was so on the fritz. But I truly think that having gotten so much sun all summer and not wearing sunscreen as a kid really, really saved me. And that's when your immune system is really developing. So we want to get our kids out in the sun as well. It's really, really important. And so, yeah, developing that vitamin D sufficiency and then getting the solar callus will allow you to be outside perhaps all summer without needing sunscreen. So I'm going to say there is a caveat to that. Like the people who are a lower Fitzpatrick. So I lived in Miami and I live in Austin, Texas, which is very south. Now, I don't think that I could potentially be outside all day long here in the middle of July without covering up a little bit, because my skin type is just like, I would probably have to be a 4 Fitzpatrick to do that. So I may sometimes lean into a zinc-based mineral sunscreen if I absolutely can't cover up, if I'm like outside in the water or something like that, or I would seek shade or cover myself a little bit, go under an umbrella once in a while. If you're a Fitzpatrick 1, let's say your ancestry is from Ireland and you live in Miami, you're not going to be able to go outside without covering up. A lot of people in Australia find themselves in this predicament, but you want to max out how like that tan. So then, you know, you have the most vitamin D. And so you could stay out as long as you possibly can without burning. Energy.
Hallå, dette Bårli og Bratsberg på Energy.
Vi på Energy Morgen mandag til fredag, 6-10, og har lyst til at du skal henge med oss.
Finn Energy på radioen din, eller hør på energy.no. Energy.
Just be a bit aware of your own situation, your own skin, and use some sun protection if you need, if you're out all day. But then we move into the afternoon. What do we do then with the light? How can we optimize that?
Yeah, and this is the area where I see a lot of people sort of unknowingly sabotaging their health and their progress, because once the sun goes down in our environment, our humans would have had no exposure to blue light. We may think, oh, the moon, but the moon is only 1 lux of brightness. So it's actually not very bright at all. And so it doesn't actually have an impact on our circadian rhythm. And the light that we would have had as early humans was fire. Fire was typically on the ground, so it was low. And it was obviously fire colored. So it was oranges, reds, yellows. It wasn't in that blue and green spectrum that is going to trigger our circadian rhythm to be activated. So this fire was able to light up our environment so we could see at night, but also sleep beautifully and not interfere with our melatonin production. And so what we're doing when the sun goes down and we should be embracing this darkness and fire warm tones, we're flipping on the lights and now the lights have changed. I don't know about you guys, but they're all LED lights here. And so these LED lights have a spectrum where there's a high peak of blue, and then it comes down, and then a little bit of some other colors and no infrared. Whereas the lights that we grew up with, like these incandescent lights, are filled with tons of infrared and a very warm hue and almost no blue light, very little.
I love that one.
Yeah, I love this one. This is from Strainless Lighting. Wow. It's so old fashioned. And when you light this in the evening, it feels so nice and so soothing to your body. And these are like the old fashioned Edison bulbs. And it almost feels like that warmth of candlelight. And that's because a lot of it is infrared. And there's a lot of those warm tones. And so when we are exposing ourselves to blue light at night, that the body again thinks it's the sun. And so it's like, oh, it's 3 p.m. So why don't we just produce some cortisol? And why don't we secrete some blood sugar and insulin? So all of this happens. And so that's going to disrupt our ability to sleep. It's going to disrupt our metabolic health. People are insulin resistant, and they're even light at night, artificial light at night. So like our screens, our LED light bulbs, highly linked to things like cancer, diabetes, obesity, immune issues, cardiovascular issues. I mean, you name it. And so this artificial light at night, they shorten it as Allen. Allen is ruining everybody's sleep. It's ruining everybody's health. And so we don't have to turn off all the lights and live like cave people. There's modern solutions. So light bulbs just like this, getting some nice, beautiful, incandescent, warm lights. You want to make sure they're incandescent and not LEDs, because the warm LEDs still have a lot of green, and there's not an absence of blue just because the light looks warm. They're still too bright and very dysregulating. I am not a fan of LED lights at all. And then I recommend going for lights more in that fire tone spectrum. A Himalayan salt lamp is a beautiful choice. And then even some red lights here and there. So like a little red nightlight. I have one in my bathroom. I was really into using like red and orange lights, those like single color lights at first, but I'm sort of moving away from that because there was never a time in our history as humans where there was only one color of light. So I think that if you do maybe a combination of these, a red or orange incandescent light bulb, all of those can be really good options for helping support better sleep. But you also want to make sure your family can see. You know, you are going to get pushback from your family if people are tripping over things, if they can't pick out their matching socks in the morning. So I think that the incandescents, especially dimmable ones, are a really good option because they allow you to see, but they're not that disruptive. The other thing is we want to make sure we're turning off overhead lights. So I mentioned that the fire was on the ground, and that's relevant because the light sensors in our eyes, these melanopsin receptors, are set up for overhead light because the sun was overhead. So if we have lights that are lower, like a table lamp, a night light, a light on the ground, that's going to not affect our circadian rhythm as much as an overhead light. So I say that when the sun is down, we want to turn off all overhead lights. We also want to think about changing those lights to the more fire toned. So this is not only when the sun sets, but also, as we were talking about earlier, before the sun rises. So we can use these dim incandescents before the sun rises as well. And then we also want to look and make sure that our lights are not more than 10 lux of brightness. And again, that we can use that circadian app from my good friend Sarah Kleiner, and that will allow us to see how bright the light is. And what's really cool is I love this lux meter. So looking at this is during the day. So in here, looking at this light, it's about 160 lux. But if you go outside and you like point it out a window, it's let's say 160 inside. It's like tens of thousands of lux outside. So outside during the day is 10 or more times brighter than inside. And inside at night, we're like 10 or more times brighter than it is outside. So we have our days and nights mixed up. So people with sleep issues, like this is a really great place to start. And people with blood sugar issues, because those two things are so, so linked. And the other thing is wearing some blue blocking glasses. So Aleta, you're wearing some yellow lenses right now during the day. Yeah. So we want to wear like a light toned yellow. Those actually may potentially be a little too dark for daytime.
You think so?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You stick with the yellow lenses during the day for inside, for screens, for like, I bring my mind to stores because of those horrendous fluorescent lights. And then we want to think about using orange and red lenses after the sun sets. Unfortunately, the clear ones don't work. A lot of people have them on their glasses. A lot of people bought them on Amazon. I wasted my money on them too. They block out a blue violet frequency that is not the frequency that is impacting our circadian rhythm. So some people are like, well, I did that pen test. They send this little blue pen and they're like, and it worked. It's like, yeah, but that's not the color that's impacting our circadian rhythm. That color you could see is a little more violet. And if you look at the sky, that's the color light. That's at 420 nanometers. That's really impacting our circadian rhythm.
Just a question. I usually use the orange more than the red. I have all the spectres, but yeah. So I have one pair without glasses. So I have one with reading glasses in and one without. When I go to the bathroom or something up at night, I use the one without reading glasses on. But if I went out in the morning and have to pass the hall and go out to the garden or whatever, should I use the orange glasses on the way out and then take them off to see the first sunlight? Or should I just walk
you
without?
You can, but how much, like, are there light bulbs on?
I don't know. No, sometimes my husband puts it on, you know.
Yeah, so if your husband is putting on the light, then perhaps, if you want to be really specific with it. But if there's no lights on and it's just the windows, then don't worry about it.
Okay. And one more thing, that the looks, was that like an application you referred to earlier that we can measure?
Yep, the My Circadian app.
Oh, it's in the same app. Yeah. Okay. Just for the listeners, we write about that in the book too. So that's great.
Yeah. I'm happy to share my code if you guys don't have one.
Yes.
Sure. My code is Danny, HH, DANI, and then HH stands for Hamilton Health.
Very good. So if people would like to download the Circadian app, they can use your code.
Yes, that's there's great. A free version as well. So you could get a lot of functionality on the free version. And then if you want to use the Lux meter more than once a day and a couple of other things, then if you want to get the paid subscription, it's quite inexpensive. So yeah.
It's such a great
app. I know, I use it constantly.
Danny, it's so interesting to listening to you. And I think you have many resources, online courses. Why don't you share something for us and for all the people who would like to learn more?
Yeah, sure. So I have a couple of upcoming courses. The first one is called Get That D. It's a silly joke, but it's about getting vitamin D and using this whole method. I'm going to go really into like what the Fitzpatrick scale and be really diligent about how to get people to safely get sun exposure, different factors influencing your body's ability to make vitamin D, how to get melanin, how to prepare your skin, different misconceptions about it, what's different between the supplement and the real thing from the sun. And so that course is coming out soon, so I can send you the wait list for that. And I'm also working on a course called the Circadian Method, and that's going to talk about some of the other things that we talked about. So how long should I be outside? What times of day should I be outside? Talking about meal timing, that's something we didn't get into. Meal timing, coffee timing. You asked earlier, and I didn't answer this, how long it takes you to like sync your circadian rhythm. Yeah. And I don't think there's an exact answer, but for me, one of the things that I started doing when I started learning about this was trying to eat my breakfast earlier instead of having coffee and then waiting and then eating breakfast at like 9 or 10. And so I realized that we are most insulin sensitive early in the day. We're best at metabolizing and digesting our food early. So we want to take advantage of that window. A lot of people intermittent fast and skip breakfast. And what I see this leading to is chronic high blood sugar levels, chronically high cortisol. And people are like, well, now I can't eat breakfast because my blood sugar is so high in the morning. And it's because you're fasting, because you took an intermittent stressor and now made it a chronic stressor by not eating every morning for years on end. And so I see men able to get away with this way more often than women. And I think that, you know, if you skip breakfast once in a blue moon, again, you're not going to drop dead. You're going to be fine. And once in a while, maybe it's a little, you know, stress on the system that could be a positive hormetic stress. But most often we do better by eating early in the day during that insulin sensitive window and then stopping eating early in the evening, which is, I think, aligned with you guys. And me too. I mean, I feel like I sleep way better if I stop eating earlier in the day. And so I always say when the sun goes down, insulin clocks out. So the insulin's clocking out. We're not good at digesting, metabolizing later in the day. So we don't want to shift our eating window to the time where we're worse at digesting and metabolizing food. And then it's impacting our sleep. Then we're not detoxing at night. We're digesting. So I didn't have an appetite in the morning. And I was like, oh God, it's going to be really hard to eat right when I wake up. So I would go outside. I would look at the sky. And it took me about 3 weeks. And what I would do was the first couple of weeks, I would just have a protein shake because it was the only thing that I could get down in the morning. I'm not a huge fan of having protein shakes kind of like in a pinch whenever you need to, but not relying on that as like a whole meal all the time. But I was doing that because that's all I could have for the first couple of weeks. So then all of a sudden, week three, I'm just looking at the sky and I was like, I'm hungry. And I was so excited because I'm like, it worked. So it took a couple weeks for my body to start moving my hunger hormones to the time when I would like them to be, when the sun is, you know, up. And so just for anyone who's like, God, you know, I go to bed so late, I eat at these weird times, just know that like you've trained your body to do that and you could train it to do other things as well. And I really recommend to move things slowly. And so this is what I'm going to help people with in the circadian method is knowing like, hey, let's start shifting these things little by little. Sometimes we have to start with the stuff in the evening before we start with the night stuff. The early morning stuff. So some people are like, I get my best sleep between 9 and 10 a.m. So I'm not going to take that away from them, but let's start with maybe looking at your evening, getting you to go to bed and fall asleep earlier, stay asleep longer. And then maybe you'll start to wake up earlier and getting outside first thing in the morning. So there's a gentle way we can do all of this. And I really don't recommend for people to just make these huge changes right away because you're not going to feel good. It's going to disrupt your sleep. You're going to be off. So every change you make, I want to challenge all those people who are type A, people pleaser, perfectionists. I'm challenging you all to make slow, sustainable changes. Okay. Slow, sustainable changes. Move your eating window by 15 minutes, a half an hour, little bits. This is not a rush. This is a lifestyle. This is something that we're going to do. And the body wants consistency. It doesn't like quick changes. So, those are some things I have coming out. I also have my blood sugar mastery program, but more things in the works.
Donny, what would a circadian breakfast morning look like?
So when it comes to building a breakfast plate, I think that it's really important to know, are you high leptin, high insulin, maybe high cortisol? And sometimes these numbers don't all match up, but are you low leptin? Are you struggling? Is your glucose low? Is your glucose dropping? Like there's going to be different things for different people. So it is really hard to say everything, you know, in just one fell swoop. But one of the things that is for sure is that amazing amount of protein. We want to get that good amount of protein on our plate. We want to think about a lot of fiber. Fiber is so good for the gut microbiome. It's often so depleted on a low carb diet. I've just been really starting to pay attention to fiber more. And I'm like, God, it is hard to get fiber eating this low carb, even if your plate is half vegetables. Like it is quite challenging. So I'm really into basil seeds lately, and they're like chia seeds, but lower in oxalates. And so basil seed pudding could be like a really addition to getting some good insoluble fiber. And then I'd also recommend some good amounts of healthy fats because that's going to help stabilize the blood sugar. And then depending on where you're at, you may want to add carbs, you may not. So for these people who are high insulin, high leptin, diabetic, pre-diabetes, we want to potentially think about taking down those carbs and replacing that with fat. But some people on the other end, you may do better with more carbs. If you've been in a low carb space for a really long time, you may need to add in some carbs to sort of kickstart that metabolism again. So I'm sort of in that place and I did keto for a while and then I added in carbs and then I've sort of been in the low carb space for a while. And now I'm like really experimenting with taking my carbs up and taking my fat down, which is like a real big difference for me. And so, and it's going really well. And so that's why I'm also moving more after meals. So it's about balancing with what you have going on, what your needs are. So, making sure the protein, fat, and fiber are really powerful tools. And then you want to play with fat and carbs as this lever. So as carbs come down, fat has to go up because this is an energy source and vice versa. So you don't have to have zero fat if you're going to have carbs, but you don't want to have a ton of fat and a ton of carbs. That energy excess gets stored as excess body fat.
Thank you so much for all the things you're sharing. And we can find you on Instagram, and your webpage is?
Yes, Instagram and my webpage is Danielle Hamilton Health. And then my podcast is Light Up Your Metabolism.
It's a great podcast.
Thanks
so much for coming onto the show. And we would like to invite you back later on to talk more about blood sugar and everything around that subject connected to that.
Awesome.
Thank you so
You're
much.
You're so welcome. Biohacking girls, taking the lead,
the future is bright, and they're planting the seed. I am so inspired. Now I'm going to start my light routine in a so much better and more structured way. How about you, Aletta?
Me too, but I am so jealous of you living in Spain, because in Norway, to follow the circadian rhythm, it's really hard. It's no days are the same. You have to get up and go to bed at different times all year around, but I love it.
So what I really appreciated about this conversation is it doesn't have to be so hard. I mean, there's always one way. You can open the window, you can walk outside. It doesn't have to be long and complicated, and you can start with small steps and create your own dream life and your own energy levels because you do the small changes. So sometimes we get overwhelmed because there's so much to do. So even the small changes will help you improve your health, your blood sugar, your levels of inflammation will lower. So I really, really appreciated that.
Yes, I think you all should listen to this, or you have been listening to this. You will take some nugget out of this and do some more work outside. Just go outside. We say it all the time. Just go outside. It's going to be better. And it's easy.
Outside life is so much better. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in and listening to the podcast. We will make sure to put all the links to Danielle Hamilton here in the show notes so you can join her courses, follow her on Instagram. And for all of you who like to listen to us in Norwegian, we will make a little recap in Norwegian, which will be published tomorrow. Thank you for listening and happy biohacking. Biohacking girls, changing the game. Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon vi deler kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.
Vi spar heier på norske bønder og godt norsk håndverk. Derfor får du denne uka hele 40% rabatt på grill og vinepølser fra Gilde. Du får også 30% rabatt på et utvalg 2 kilos pose med poteter fra Gartner. Så takk, kjære bønder, for all den gode maten. Hilsen oss I Spar.